This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. It's a beautiful Sunday. Thank you so much for spending it with us. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. I'm Rick Moore. A show today that just won't seem to go away because it's important. It continues to come back. New reports, interesting information. For some people, one of the first questions is, why is it still important, and why is it important to me? Our guest today, Professor Walt, proper pronunciation, because I do this every time. I keep thinking about a beer. Walt Heinicke.
Close enough. The beer is how I use, or remind people about my name. It's Heinicke.
Walt Heinicke. And next to him, Professor Peter Norton.
Hey, Rick.
Thank you both for joining us. Professor Heinicke, president of UVA's chapter, American Association University Professors. Also a professor of research, statistics, and evaluation at the Curry School. Professor Norton, vice president of UVA's AAUP chapter, and professor at UVA's School of Engineering and Applied Science, also on UVA's faculty senate. Gentlemen, we're going to be talking today about the whole Helen Dragas Board of Visitors, President Teresa Sullivan issue from last June, and obviously it keeps going on. It seems like every month there's some other little tidbit that pops up. And the AAUP put forth a report in March about how poorly handled everything was. Why is this important to people who don't live in Charlottesville, not faculty, not alumni of University of Virginia? Why should they continue to listen this hour?
This is about the quality of public education, not only in the Commonwealth, but in the United States as well. You know, the very existence of public universities is at issue in the current era. And this episode at UVA was just an example of things that are happening around the country in terms of public universities being under the gun. And not only public universities just being under the gun, but the quality of public education and public higher education in the United States is at issue here at the University of Virginia and in the Commonwealth.
I'd like to add that I think this issue, the June 2012 crisis, could be behind us now. But I think to put it behind us, we would really have to take a look at what went wrong and make sure that we fixed it so it wouldn't happen again. And I don't think we've done that. I've been surprised at how many people in well-placed positions, like in the Board of Visitors itself, will say things like, let's stop talking about this so we can move forward. In my view, you move forward by repairing damage. I imagine these are the same people who would not stop their car if the engine was on fire because they'd say, I want to keep moving forward. I say, let's look at what went wrong and fix it, because I'm afraid that the same factors that made this crisis happen almost a year ago are still in place right now. And I think there's some easy common sense ways to fix them so that the flagship institution of this Commonwealth is on a sure footing and won't repeat the mistakes of the past.
Oh, but what about those folks who say, well, you know, I don't know how, I just know that the car runs or doesn't run, and I don't look under the hood?
I think that's actually a fair answer, but I think we need to make sure that we don't have a breakdown on the highway in traffic. And that means checking the engine, and if you don't want to check it yourself, have the experts look at it, whether it's a mechanic or higher education experts who can say, you know, this is a university that's going to stay in its lane and keep moving.
You know, the University of Virginia is the flagship university, and it's representation of the excellent universities that we have in the Commonwealth, and those universities produce significant outcomes for the Commonwealth, whether it be economic. We create an informed citizenry. We train teachers. The universities play a really important role in the fabric of not only the Commonwealth, but in American society as well. And we're worried about the quality of higher education, and we want to keep promoting the improved quality of higher education. And this episode last summer was a threat to the quality of higher education.
So this goes beyond Charlottesville, beyond the alums and the faculty of the University of Virginia. When I started doing my homework for today's show, again, Professor Peter Norton and Professor Walter Heineke from American Association of University Professors, they are both faculty at the University of Virginia. There were topics about other universities across the country. There was something at University of Texas Austin. There was another at Emory University. I believe Emory's near Atlanta. Can we talk a bit about those, or can you give us a little bit of background about those too, so that we have actual proof that it's not just Charlottesville? Share this with the listeners.
Well, you know, times are changing for public higher education. All over the country, we see reduced funding, which is creating a lot of problems for public education as well as private higher education as well. These are forcing rises in tuition. It's creating issues, problems for tenure and academic freedom and shared governance among faculty. We see it at the University of Texas. We've seen it at the University of Wisconsin system. We've seen it at the University of Oregon. We see it at Southern University. We've seen it at universities across the country. And it's almost like an epidemic, actually, where we have, outside political forces, which are sort of questioning and forcing new types of economic models on higher education. And it's quite frankly created kind of a crisis across the country, which threatens the quality of public and private higher education across the country. So it's not just happening here at UVA. It is happening across the country. I think the UVA case was very interesting and significant because Thomas Jefferson started the university to create a university which was focused on the public and on creating a strong democratic citizenry.
I'd like to just comment on something, a term that Walt used, shared governance, because it's not obvious what that means. I think an analogy might be useful. If you had a hospital, it would be run by managers, not by doctors. And the managers would want a well-run hospital. They'd want a cost-effective hospital and so on. And they'd want to get donations from outside of the hospital to help fund it. But they wouldn't, these managers wouldn't go into the operating room and tell a surgeon, oh, no, I don't think you should use a nylon suture here. You should use something else, you know. And by the way, I don't agree that we should necessarily make the incision right there, make it over here. That has no place in a hospital. And I think we've been seeing that kind of overstepping in some cases in higher education, where we see the people entrusted with the job of making sure that the institution is well managed and cost effective and maintains its fiduciary responsibilities to the state in which it's located and to the other constituencies. I think that was misunderstood in some cases, most especially at the University of Virginia, by some people in the governing board to mean, let's go in there and actually instruct people on how to do this. Because the experts in higher education in a university are the faculty. And although they are responsible to the management of the university, which is the board, it's a principle of shared responsibility. And that's one that Walt was referring to by the term shared governance, which is really what AAUP, the American Association of University Professors, stands for. And we think that with shared governance, we wouldn't have crises like the one we had last summer here.
Rick Moore here with WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guests, Professor Walt Heineke and Professor Peter Norton, both from University of Virginia and the American Association University Professors. We're talking about the incident from last June and then going forward to a report that came out this March. For those who may be new to the area, maybe didn't follow it, University Board of Visitors, I guess, is the word fired? Did they actually fire Professor Sullivan? Did she choose in the end to step down? But in the end, Professor Sullivan left the university, and whoever made that choice, it came up to be very poorly suited for the faculty, for the students, for the alumni here at the university. And then later on in June, she was brought back to the University of Virginia.
They gave her an ultimatum, which was resign or be fired. And being fired would have been very embarrassing, not just for President Sullivan personally, but for the university itself. And so confronted with that ultimatum, she did the graceful thing of resigning. And she resigned having been told that she had lost the support of the faculty of the university, which very clearly was not the case.
But she was also told she lost the support of the Board of Visitors. So let's talk for a minute about the difference in the roles of the Board of Visitors and the faculty. Because, and I'm never going to find it in the great scope of my questions for the hour, but there are different roles that each plays, and who runs the university? Because for many, or at least for an important few on the boards of visitors, that they believe that that's their role. They are the managers of the University of Virginia, and the faculty are high-level employees, but you don't get to make that decision as to who will be the overall boss, correct?
Well, yeah, so Peter brought up the issue of shared governance, and universities are different than corporations, and the report brings this distinguishing characteristics up, that universities really are not like corporate entities. The Board of Visitors certainly has the authority vested by the legislature in being the ultimate governing body of the university, and no one's questioned that at all. But the way that universities work, and the way that the best universities work, is when that governance is shared and that each constituent has its own role and its clearly defined role, and the faculty is definitely has a role in curriculum and also in governance as well, and the administration, the president, has its certain roles and responsibilities in terms of running the university. But the report makes it very clear that the best universities are run where those decisions are shared amongst the three or four constituencies, you know, the faculty, the administration, the Board of Visitors, the parents and alumni and students. They're all constituents that are part of the decision-making process.
But you don't get to do that at a business. The board of directors determine who the CEO is, who the COO is. The customers may play a role in that because you either purchase or use that business, and then that's it.
This is actually a really interesting point because, I mean, there's a couple of ways of looking at it. One is that, first of all, a university is not a corporation. I can quote President Sullivan herself, who said, "Corporate-style, top-down leadership does not work well in a great university. Sustained change with buy-in does work." Now, that, you could say, of course, is the perspective of a career academic and a professor. But the business perspective on this is interesting, too, which is that, as the AAUP report shows, business faculty at the Darden School of Business agreed that a board that had conducted itself the way the Board of Visitors did in June 2012 would be a disgrace, and that nobody would have been reappointed to head such a board after such a bungled operation. The reappointment of the rector was specifically being criticized here because business experts were saying this was a board director who had made a big mistake, and such a board director would never have been reappointed in a corporation. It took a political decision in the General Assembly and by the governor to make that happen. And that's a degree of blunder that you couldn't get in a corporation because of the accountability to the shareholders. The political accountability here is such that we don't have that kind of responsiveness.
Our guest today, UVA professor Peter Norton. He's a member of the UVA Faculty Senate. He's also vice president of the Virginia UVA chapter of the American Association of University Professors. Also with us, Professor Walter Heineke. He is the president of UVA's AAU chapter. We're talking about our event from last summer. UVA President Teresa Sullivan stepping down after some harsh words from university's Board of Visitors. We'll be getting in a little more about the actual report that came out in March. Let's do this.
And support for WNRN Today coming from TNN Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, TNN specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. TNN offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. TNN Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming is supported by the Jefferson Theater, presenting Over the Rhine with Ben Soleil for a reserved seated show on Friday, April 12th. Over the Rhine is an Ohio-based husband and wife team who've performed together for 25 years. Tickets for the April 12th show at jeffersontheater.com. All right, back to our guests, Professor Peter Norton, Professor Walter Heineke, talking about a report, the American Association of University Professors, on the event from last June, UVA Board of Visitors, and somewhat specifically Helen Dragas versus UVA school professor Teresa Sullivan. Gentlemen, I want to get into the report in a minute, but let's talk about the mission of the American Association of University Professors. Put forth a report that came out in March. What is the goal of the American Association of University Professors? By the name of the organization, it sounds much like a labor union, and you are strictly representing the faculty at a university, not the alumni, not the students, not the board, et cetera?
Well, that's a great question. And first, I just want to let you know, we're a national organization. There are 48,000 members of the AUP nationally, and there are 300 local chapters across the country and 30 state organizations. The mission of the American Association of University Professors is to advance academic freedom and shared governance, to define fundamental professional values and standards for higher education, and to ensure higher education's contribution to the common good. It was founded in 1915, and the AUP has helped to shape American higher education by developing standards and procedures that maintain quality in education and academic freedom in this country's colleges and universities. The AUP is actually made up of and takes as its members not only faculty but graduate students, and administrators can be a part of the AUP, and actually the public and alumni can be a part of the AUP. But it is a voice specifically for the faculty, and the faculty have an important role, as Peter was saying earlier, in the shared governance of the university. Fundamentally, universities are about creating knowledge, and that's what professors do in their work, is to create knowledge. And the AUP stands as an organization which is not a union. We're in a right-to-work state, so we don't engage in collective bargaining. But we are a 501c3 organization that does attempt to promote the ideals of shared governance and the ideals of academic freedom in universities across the country, across the Commonwealth, and specifically right here at UVA during crises like we had during the last summer.
And I'd like to just add to that a little comment about what academic freedom means, because I think the expression is not always well understood. First of all, I think one of the greatest champions of academic freedom we've ever encountered is Thomas Jefferson himself, the founder of the University of Virginia, who wrote in a letter in his to capture his vision of what the University of Virginia would be, he said, "This institution will be based on the illimitable freedom of the human mind. For here we are not afraid to follow truth wherever it may lead, nor to tolerate any error so long as reason is left free to combat it." That is the clearest articulation of academic freedom I've ever encountered. As to why it matters, well, it's why AAUP exists. About 100 years ago, there was a professor, Edward Ross, at Stanford University, who was very critical of the Southern Pacific Railroad. And it turned out the Southern Pacific Railroad was the business that created the wealth that created Stanford University. Leland Stanford made his fortune from the Southern Pacific Railroad and used it to establish a great university, namely Stanford. Well, after Leland Stanford's death, his widow, Jane Stanford, remained a leading figure at the university. And she wasn't happy with what Edward Ross was saying in his classrooms about the Southern Pacific Railroad. And at one point, he perhaps somewhat intemperately said that a railroad deal is a railroad steal, right? And that, to Jane Stanford, was going too far, and she got him fired for it. Several faculty members resigned in protest over this, but there was nothing more they can do. And it was as a direct result of that incident that the American Association of University Professors was formed, not to protect professors' jobs, but rather to protect their freedom to pursue truth wherever it may lead and to correct error with reason. And it is that freedom that I think we see threatened when a governing board at any higher education body intervenes in the and crosses the line of shared governance into sort of direct control of the university. The president is there to be a buffer between the board and the faculty, and they were removing that buffer. And the president is also there as a higher education expert, which the board lacks. And they bypassed the expert and presumed to make expert decisions without expert advice.
That's Professor Peter Norton from UVA's School of Engineering. He's also the vice president of UVA's chapter of the American Association of University Professors. We also have Professor Walter Heineke. He is president of the AAU chapter here at UVA and a professor at the Curry School.
Yeah, we serve the AUP serves the profession rather than individual faculty members, and our services are available to all members of the profession, regardless of membership status. So, I mean, you see the AEP intervening in cases all across the country, and they intervened here at UVA because they saw a violation of basic standards of academic freedom and shared governance. The academic freedom issue is an important issue in this society. These days, think about it. Some people say, "Well, you know, why do professors have tenure?" Well, look at the way our federal government is set up. We have federal judges who have lifetime tenure, and they serve as a check and balance to other institutions in the government. Right? They serve as a check. There's a checks and balances at the federal, state, and local level. There are checks and balances between the different branches of government. Well, and higher education also is an institution that provides an important role in society, and the ability to engage in free research and investigation on all matters of knowledge is an important role in our society. And academic freedom is really about protecting the ability of universities and university professors to engage in that kind of work and research that actually strengthens our democracy and strengthens our society.
11:23 here on the Wake Up Call. Guys, let's talk about the report for a few minutes. The report was put out by the American Association of University Professors, AAUP, looking back on what happened in June and a little bit past that time frame to talk about, I guess, the pros and cons, maybe sort of like I read it as at least in the beginning, somewhat of a newspaper report as to fact A, fact B, fact C, and then talking about the what happened from all the behavior that followed. Did you actually find, and I say you, neither of you were on the what's the proper term? It wasn't called a board, but on the committee that did the report. In fact, nobody from UVA was on the committee.
We were interviewed. I was interviewed, for example.
But the people who put forth the report were all members of the AAUP.
Yes.
From all across the country.
Right.
I don't remember doing a count, but there seemed to be like 15 or so in the teens number of professors from large schools, small schools, different sociology, education, engineering, foreign language. It was all sorts of members that were made up this committee. But did they find anything new, or was the report still wagging the finger at the same people for the same things that we had already discussed over the summer?
Well, I think it's the best chronicle of what happened and an investigation into why it happened and trying to give an understanding of what occurred. So, I mean, it clearly lays out that there was no financial crisis at the root of this, at the root of these decisions by the Board of Visitors.
Which is what was said early on, what caused the decisions to be made between the Board of Visitors and UVA President
right.
It Sullivan.
It clearly points out that faculty compensation wasn't the cause of this crisis. It clearly shows that online educational issues was not the cause of the crisis. It clearly showed that President Sullivan not having a long-range strategic plan was not the cause of the problem. It clearly outlines the fact that a lack of boldness on the part of President Sullivan was not the cause, because we're not a corporation and we don't engage in strategic dynamism as a way of operating. It made it clear, very crystal clear, that the Board of Visitors made no effort to engage the president or the faculty on the underlying issues that the board itself had raised. The report states that the Board of Visitors was in disregard of its own fiduciary obligations. It also...
Explain that.
The board has an obligation to consult with its different constituencies when it's making these kinds of decisions, and it clearly violated that requirement to communicate with its constituencies. The report also, does point a finger at a headstrong rector who ignored the Board of Visitors' own presidential evaluation system that they had implemented the fall prior to the episode. The report clearly outlines the fact that the board neglected its collective responsibility. It clearly outlines the fact that faculty shared governance was ignored in these issues, that there was no role for faculty in the dismissal of the president, although AAUP norms require that faculty be involved in the hiring of administrators. But in this case, there was no role for the faculty in the dismissal process.
So you can play... You can be involved in Part A, but not in Part B.
Exactly right. The report was really clear on that. It was very clear on the fact that there was no explicit procedure for removal of a president that was followed in this case. It was arbitrary, that the decision and the process was arbitrary. There was no warning given to President Sullivan. The report was clear.
No, that's not true. She was told on Friday, and then she was let go on Monday.
Well, if that's what you call a warning, Rick, I'll give you that one. But it didn't seem like adequate.
I said that
warning.
In a snide way for those who couldn't see the facial expression.
Again, there was no faculty consultation in this process. The decision by the board was arbitrary, according to the report. Also, the report points out that the Board of Visitors' response to the Southern Association of Colleges, our accrediting body, is not a hopeful indication of where this is going in the future.
All right. Again, our guest today, Professor Walter Heinicke, Professor Peter Norton, both professors at the University of Virginia and members of the American Association of University Professors. We're now talking about the report that was put forth in March of this year, just about 3 weeks ago. Call us up if you have a question or a comment about the topic. Again, the issues involving the UVA Board of Visitors, more specifically, Rector Helen Dragas, and University Professor Teresa Sullivan, that started last June of 2012, 979-0919, 877-967-6762. This is listener-supported independent music radio, WNRN, and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, Rick, that the report itself is convergent with a couple of other reports and facts. For instance, the UVA Faculty Senate still maintains a vote of no confidence in the Board of Visitors. So it comports with the Faculty Senate's take on the issues and what continues to be current issues.
You have no confidence, and you have the UVA Faculty Senate. Is everyone participating in that, or is it much like legislation where you have to be voted in to be a member of the Senate?
Any faculty member can be elected to the Faculty Senate, which has about 84 current senators serving on it.
So does a vote of no confidence mean anything in terms of work being done? Or is that just saying, drawing an X on their door to show that we don't like them
anymore?
It's
important, Rick, and here's why. First of all, there's, to my knowledge, and we've been looking for months now, there's never been a vote of no confidence in a governing board by a faculty senate at any institution of higher education in the United States of America before. We know it means something because it got the attention that this crisis merited. We know that it matters because the Board of Visitors is on record asking the Senate to rescind the vote of no confidence. The Senate has not done so because it's not satisfied that the Board of Visitors has sufficiently taken steps to get faculty consultation as well as consultation from staff, students, and alumni on future decisions. I think I can speak for many senators, at least I speak for myself, when I say I'm not satisfied by a response we've heard from the Board of Visitors that says that this is somehow dwelling on the past and that we're trying to dig stuff up and that we're just making the university look bad. I think if you want to fix a problem, you have to open the hood, as we said before, and look and see what's broken and fix it, and not go into denial and keep driving, which I'm afraid to say is been the kind of thing we've been looking at.
Professor Peter Norton is a member of UVA's Faculty Senate. Real quick, are these votes done publicly? Isn't the right word, but do you raise your hand, or are these private votes?
The vote of no confidence, like other faculty votes, is entirely public. It was done on an emergency basis during the crisis by the Senate's Executive Council, which is the leadership body. But then to ratify it, we presented it to the entire Senate of over 80 people in a mass meeting held on Father's Day last June, at which I think it was 600 or 700 people showed up as guests. So it was as public as it gets. The press covered this thing, and the ratification was overwhelming. It was approximately 75-2. Those numbers might be slightly off, but it was in that ballpark. So the vote of no confidence was done in the light of day, and we'd like to see decisions of all kinds done entirely in the light of day as well, certainly unlike the decisions that were made last June by the governing board.
And I'd like to add that this report by the AUP also comports with our accrediting body's report, the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, which has put the University of Virginia on warning because of issues that relate to faculty involvement in such decision and issues related to outside influence and the possibility of minority influence.
I think that this, in a way, is a way to get an answer to your initial questions, Rick, about why this still matters and about why it matters to people besides faculty. Universities are recognized and are regarded as sound institutions because they are inspected by accrediting agencies, in our case, the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. It's their job to make sure the university is doing well by its students and by the people who send those students to college for an education. And that governing body is very reluctant to chastise an institution of higher education and seldom does so. But it did so in this case, which is a suggestion that what's in jeopardy here for the Commonwealth of Virginia is the reputation of its number one institution of higher education. That's a reputation built over many decades, or almost
since 1819.
Yeah, there you go.
Since 1819. That's on my sweatshirt.
And we were facing the possibility of flushing that down the toilet in a matter of a few days. Fortunately, we reversed the tide, and now University of Virginia has been recently recognized, I think, by the Princeton Review as the top publicly funded institution of higher education in America. But keeping it that way will mean keeping a close eye on the governing board to make sure it doesn't repeat the mistakes of the past that it apparently is still unwilling to really confront.
Quick question. How unique is what happened to the U.S. Collegiate system?
It's not unique in that these kinds of attacks are happening across universities in the United States, but it is unique in outcome. And the report, I think, indicates that, you know, in most cases, these sort of corporate-style, hostile takeovers end up in presidents being fired without any faculty input. But in this case, due to the incredible job of the Faculty Senate, alumni, students, and the public, people came out in droves onto the lawn and made it clear that this was a line in the sand, that this kind of behavior, this kind of nonsense was not going to happen at Thomas Jefferson's University, a university which stands for democracy, for citizenship, for academic freedom. You know, it was unique in that it was turned around and the president got her job back. And I think it's a testament to the power of Thomas Jefferson's original idea about what a public university was all about.
Our guest today, Professor Peter Norton, Professor Walter Heinicke, they are members of UVA's faculty, as well as president and vice president of University of Virginia's American Association of University Professors. Talking about the incidents from last June, Professor Teresa Sullivan being forced to resign by the university's Board of Visitors, and a report that the AAUP put out this March. 877-967-6762. Call up with your questions or comments.
Independent Music Radio WNRN is made possible by the Stony Badger in Lynchburg, serving All-American wings, burgers, crab cakes, and ribs, plus 24 beers on tap, including locals like Devil's Backbone. You can find the full menu at stonybadger.com.
Hi, I'm Erin Callis, health educator with the Thomas Jefferson Health District at the Charlottesville Health Department, and we are conducting two motivational classes targeting middle school students on April 22nd and 29th. The classes are 1 hour and will help sixth graders to better understand how to make informed decisions, set goals, develop healthy relationships, and build determination. The class, titled Mind You, will be interactive and at no cost to all the participants. The classes are being held at the Charlottesville Health Department, located on Rose Hill Drive. For more information, please visit us online at tjhd.org. I'm Erin Callis, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today on a lovely, lovely Sunday to talk about the American Association of University Professors, the report that was put forth just about 3 weeks ago. Our guest, Professor Peter Norton, Professor Walt Heinicke. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much for being here. The report, as it came out, were any laws violated, or was this just all about bad decision-making? I believe the quote that I found in there was failure of common sense, et cetera. Were any laws broken?
I don't think any laws were broken, but certainly norms of the profession were broken. And it does raise some other larger issues. The report really talks about state context as well. And I think it's important to point out that the report brings up the how governing board members are appointed. And it basically says the norm of the profession has been to not appoint governing board members as political payoffs for contributions to gubernatorial campaigns, and that should be avoided at all costs. The report also talks about how the appointment terms for governing board members should be longer, because it creates a problem when there's such a short, there's a quick turnover of board members who don't understand the university and don't understand how the universities work. The report also brings up the issue that trustees or governing board members should be fully informed and trained about the mission and function of public universities. And this ball was dropped, according to the report, as well. So it's really a nonpartisan issue. I think it's an important point to realize that, you know, Governor McDonald reappointed the rector despite what happened. But also had the help of Mark Warner, who's a Democrat. So it's really not a Republican-Democrat issue. It's really about appointing the kinds of folks to these governing boards that really understand what the public mission of these universities are.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because the report was put out in March. Do either of you know when it was finished?
It was late March. I can't remember the date.
Yeah.
No. I guess my question being, we talk about Hallandragas being reappointed.
Oh.
There were
right
things were done over. I interviewed Delegate David Toscano back in December. We talked about some folks trying to block her from being reappointed, or to put forth and say that they were against it, so that Governor McDonald might not reappoint her, and then or in the committee fashion throughout the legislature, stop her from coming forth that way. Was that talked about anywhere in the report in terms of, you say that Governor Warner, Democrat, Governor McDonald, a Republican, about the failure to stop her even on a smaller level from coming through?
Well, as I recall in the report, the votes in the legislature and the House and the Senate were listed in terms of that they being kind of unusual. Usually these reappointment votes are slam dunks. It's like, you know, 200-0 or whatever. In this case, there were a significant amount of votes not to reappoint the rector. There was also a lot of legislative activity going on this last session about how governing board members are appointed, who should be appointed, should there be a faculty member on the Board of Visitors that either has doesn't have a vote, is a non-voting member, or is a voting member. Those kinds of things were going on at the legislative level for the entire session. I think that the report points out that there are state level issues that are sort of serve as the context for the immediate crisis and making sure that we get things right as we move forward.
Well, and I know this was in the report again. Our guest today, Professor Walter Heinicke, Professor Peter Norton, both from the University of Virginia, President and Vice President of UVA's chapter of the American Association of University Professors, a report just released about 3 weeks ago, mid-March, on the events from last June, Professor Sullivan being asked to step down. What about the changes suggested to UVA's Board of Visitors? Faculty member put on the board, hopefully to have a vote, or at least to sit there and on the back wall and watch what's going on. Has any of this been discussed in a greater manner by the Board of Visitors?
They've added a faculty member to each of the standing committees. That is not to the board itself, but to the committees that specialize on more particular aspects of university governance. It's one per committee, and they were named by administration.
Whose administration?
The UVA administration, that is by President Sullivan and her team. The official criteria for selection was having a particular expertise or competence in the area of committee responsibility. While this is a welcome step, I think I can speak for a lot of people when I say that it's well short of having a permanent member of the Board of Visitors itself who's a faculty member. There's a non-voting student member of the Board of Visitors, but there's not even a non-voting faculty member of the Board of Visitors.
Why is that? I mean, why is there, was there ever any press release that said, this is why we allow a student but don't allow a faculty member? Or is it just sort of, it never came up before?
It seems to me that it, a board of visitors would eagerly want a faculty member on its board at a minimum so that they can get the perspective of the kind of response they could expect to a board initiative. They were clearly blindsided by their plans in June. I think they would love to have been cautioned by a faculty member on the board who might have said to them, you know, if you do this, there's going to be a big stink and you might not like it. That would have saved them a lot of trouble. Now, I've heard the a reason alleged that I think is without merit, and that is that there's a conflict of interest because the Board of Visitors votes on salaries for faculty members, and that a faculty member on the Board of Visitors would be in a conflict of interest for that reason. That
well,
would
that's kind of stupid because there's lots
there
of lots of boards where somebody dismisses themselves from the vote.
Well, I see I don't have to talk you into that, Rick. I mean, they can recuse themselves from such a vote. We're also talking about a non-voting member anyway. Even if the member did vote, if it appeared that a faculty member was voting for a salary out of self-interest, that would presumably galvanize everybody else on the board to vote against the proposal. So I don't think that that's a sincere reason for preventing membership by a faculty member.
11:44 here on the Wake Up Call. This is listener-supported independent music radio, WNRN, and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Peter's saying. You know, the report points out that there's still some unfinished business here. And, you know, as a local chapter, we'll be interested in following these things up. But the first one is right now there's no faculty role in presidential evaluation or the process or procedure for the dismissal of a president going forward. And we feel that that needs to be clearly laid out going forward. You know, I think in the report's clear that there should either be a non-voting faculty member on the board or maybe a voting member of the faculty on the board. There are issues about the appointment of Board of Visitors that need to be looked at going forward in the next year. There are certainly issues about training for Board of Visitors. I think there's a sort of a significant section in the report about how, you know, just having a one-day training session by themselves is not the way to really go forward for the board.
What but do you that, train somebody on the board to be besides, you know, don't be a jerk?
You know, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. And, you know, and I'll say these are lay people who are appointed to a board that they come on and they don't really understand what
the
adversities are
about. But at the point, my understanding is that, or at least the accusation is, that you get to be on the board because you donated a lot of money or got to be good friends with the person who's making that. And again, we can talk about Governor McDonald because he's the person in governor now, but he did not, Governor Tim Kaine put Helen Dragas on the
That's
board,
right.
correct?
Yeah, you're right.
And former Governor Mark Warner mm-hmm. actually came forth and said, and I don't know if he came in full support of Helen Dragas, but he didn't say, no, she must go. So it's not like you can pick, as you said earlier, it's not a Republican versus Democrat,
right.
but it does seem to be financially important.
Right.
So what do you teach someone who comes from a base where they have a lot of money and in most places have a lot of money because they are good business owners? What do you teach them? What do you train them about?
I'd like to comment on this because I think your question raises a really good question, which is, you know, maybe people should be appointed who actually don't need training because they already understand the subject matter. I'd like your listeners to consider what would happen if we started getting state Supreme Court and U.S. Supreme Court appointments handled like we saw some recent board appointments handled. In other words, you might not have to be a lawyer. You might not have to really have any legal expertise at all. If you'd given a big enough campaign contribution, maybe you could be named to the Supreme Court. Now, it's easy to see why we don't want that to happen. We want people who know the Constitution, who know the whole precedents in set in court cases. We don't want people who need, let's say, a one-week buff-up training course on the history of the U.S. Supreme Court or something like that. Now, while I would favor training for board members because I think it might prevent the kind of misjudgments we saw last June, I would even more strongly prefer that board appointments be of people who don't need such training because they understand higher education, because they know the students' perspective, the faculty members' perspective, the staff members' perspective already, and because they come out of a higher education background. Then we wouldn't even have to talk about proposals for mandatory training of board members.
And given the fact that the appointments are kind of moving along in the same vein as they have in the past, we would argue that for those folks that are appointed in the future, that they do need some training about the culture and the norms of public universities and how they work out. They need more interaction with faculty to understand what faculty do, how faculty do their jobs, what students do, how alumni interact with faculty. So I think this whole thing got off the rails a couple administrations ago. We used to have a non-ideological sort of vetting committee that looked at candidates for the Board of Visitors. I think this was during Warner's time, and that process sort of went off the rails. So it seems to me that ever since the Kane administration, these appointments to the Board of Visitors have gotten more and more sort of politically motivated, and we've gotten off the rails. And I think we saw the perfect storm this summer.
This coincided with the rising cost of seeking political office. So there's a lot of pressure on politicians to raise the money they need because it's so expensive to get elected now. And that might be another structural problem that helps explain what went wrong.
11:50 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guests, again, Professor Walter Heineke, Professor Peter Norton, as we talk about the American Association of University Professors' viewpoint on what happened last June with UVA's Board of Visitors and UVA President Teresa Sullivan.
Michelle Knuckles, mortgage banker with Westar Mortgage, joins our members in support of independent music radio WNRN. Westar can help with a purchase or refinance from first-time buyers to jumbo loans. You can reach Michelle at michelleknuckles.com. Two L's in Michelle, N-U-C-K-O-L-S.com. Westar Mortgage is an equal opportunity housing company. NMLS number 198053.
And thank you for listening today. We also want to take a moment and let you know about Fresh Roots and New Blues. It's a program of new artists carrying on the rich roots and blues traditions in new and exciting ways. It's the latest addition to WNRN's diverse music menu. Longtime WNRN volunteer, music maven, and friend Steve Hamilton handpicks the new roots and blues music Saturdays at 7. Discover something new about one of the oldest American music forms, Fresh Roots and New Blues, Saturday, 7 p.m. here on Independent Music Radio, WNRN. All right, back for about 10 minutes with our guest today, talking about a thing that happened last summer and going forward. So there's two parts of this going forward. One is at UVA, and one is from the faculty perspective, or I guess from the more particular rather than just the big scheme of university as a college. Who wants to jump in first? Let's talk about the AAUP and what the steps are.
Yeah, so the report was really clear. I don't want to spend my time villainizing the rector. To me, that's probably not productive. And the report was really clear that there were structural issues that were behind this sort of derailment of the summer and the one that continues to plague us. We're sort of moving forward in terms of thinking, how can we be a part of the solution, and how can we be productive in moving the university forward? You know, the AAUP is a voice for faculty and graduate students and the public to be engaged in shared governance and academic freedom and continued quality in public education. So far our chapter has kickstarted again. There was a dormant chapter of the AAUP at UVA, and Peter and I were involved in kickstarting and getting that chapter moving. We've met. We've established a new charter. We've met with the president and the provost. We had a very productive meeting with the president and the provost. We're in the process right now of working with them and the faculty senate on a review of the faculty handbook, which sort of governs issues of tenure and academic freedom. We are engaged in providing an annual report to the president and the provost about academic freedom and shared governance.
Do you provide a report to the Board of Visitors?
We certainly could. We certainly could share that report with the Board of Visitors.
But currently, that's not part of the plan. You said giving it to, providing it for the university professor, but that's part of our whole discussion for the hour.
Sure.
Is that those two may not always get along. We haven't even touched on the fact that I think the Washington Post said, hey, there's some stuff that's still going on here.
We would like to communicate with the Board of Visitors. The Board of Visitors did not accept an invitation from AAUP to contribute to its report and to offer interviews to them that would have been a part of this report. But I would think it would be in the board's best interest to talk with faculty, including the AAUP chapter.
And we're certainly more than happy to work with them on that training issue that was brought up in the report of providing, you know, some information about how public universities work and about the norms of the profession. But let me tell you that we're also working with the Faculty Senate and the administration on a statement of academic free speech. We're doing a review of a recent Faculty Senate survey on shared governance issues. We're looking into status and pay for non-tenure-track faculty and issues of expected continuance of employment at UVA. We've been asked to look at faculty status of librarians, the size of the administration, how the peer review process may work.
Something Walt mentions brings to mind a point that was raised maybe half an hour ago, which is the question of tenure. I think it's easy for people outside the university to get the impression that professors all have tenure and don't have to respond to some of the pressures that other people in employment have to respond to. But actually, nationwide, about 70% of the faculty members at universities are not only not tenured, but not eligible for tenure.
And it's quick question to interrupt.
Yes.
Do both of you have tenure?
I do not.
I do not.
Walt has tenure and I do not. And I actually think that's very nice because that means we have in the chapter leadership representation of both perspectives.
I asked that question because I wanted to know whether or not that allowed you to take a more frontal view, you know, voice in this conversation. So it is nice to know that you are both sides are.
I searched my conscience and decided I needed to speak up, even though I don't have tenure, in part because so many other faculty members who are not eligible for tenure, very understandably, don't speak up very much about what's going on. And the fact of the matter is, non-tenure track faculty members are held to the same performance quality standards as their tenured colleagues. Nevertheless, they face significant disadvantages. Even a non-tenure track faculty member of equal rank with a tenured colleague is almost certain to be paid significantly less. And one of the reasons I joined AAUP and decided to be part of our chapter's leadership is that I'm very impressed with what the national organization has had to say about non-tenure track faculty, that is faculty who are not eligible for tenure. And I think this is a major issue at universities nationwide, and I think we're going to start addressing that.
All right, just 11:58, so just a few seconds left. Are there future reports coming up? There's been a Washington Post report about emails going back and forth between Rector Dragas and President Sullivan that seemed to tell that this incident, this dislike or goal to get President Sullivan out is still ongoing. Is there something that the AAUP is doing to involve itself to make sure that whatever the outcome, it's done in the proper manner?
Well, you know, the AAUP, one of the folks that was involved with the report was just here recently talking to our chapter. And, you know, he said, and this was reported in the paper, that, you know, more action is possible. The AAUP will meet in this summer to look at this report and to look what's happened since. So both at the national level and I think at the local chapter level, we are staying closely tuned to developments that we see that, you know, don't look positive in terms of the continued sort of issues that are unresolved and the potential conflict between the Board of Visitors and the university administration and or the faculty.
The lesson for us is keep paying attention, and we're doing that.
And we're trying to grow our chapter. The AUP is an independent voice here at UVA. We're not part of the Faculty Senate. We're not involved directly in governance, but we do provide another venue for everyone who's at UVA to participate in shared governance and to participate in speaking out about these issues.
Well, thank you both for being guests today to talk about the topic. Again, our professors, Peter Norton and Professor Walter Heineke, they are members of University of Virginia's faculty. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Next week, we'll be talking about grief, the topic that I've wanted to discuss for quite some time after some incidents for friends. In the fall, we'll have two local consultants / therapists on to talk about grief. Thank you so much. Drew Thompson up next. Les Thames Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.